we have that mic? Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Solid Rock. You know, when you've had a relationship for, 30 years, thank you, Bob, it does feel like you're coming home because you have been faithfully praying for us and supporting us for decades, and we really want to thank you because this is a team effort. When we say partners, we mean it, and as Bob said, we supervise quite a few workers in our region, and your impact is bigger than just us, because through your giving and praying, we are able to serve many people, and not just our global workers that we directly supervise, but also the people that they impact and the people that they impact. So it's really amazing to see how a church in Prescott, Arizona can impact the kingdom in so many different ways. So thank you.
So if we go to the next slide. So in terms of we do supervision, as you mentioned, supervision, training, member care, crisis response, and then a liaison. I'm going to explain a little bit more about what a liaison is in this case. But the supervision that we do, go ahead and go to the next one, is what you would expect. We get a lot of emails. We answer a lot of emails. We're on the computer a lot. We're on Zoom calls a lot. We just spend time with our people also in their homes as we travel around. And we like to call it, we try to remove rocks from just what they're doing. And so they do a lot of different ministries. One of them is church planting, which we're excited about. We have one going on in Spain. Next slide. We have one going on also in Vienna. And we got another one in Ireland and just different places. It's a real privilege to be able to go and see that. Yeah, in France as well. So go ahead. Next one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, training, yeah. So another thing that we try to do is we try to train. These are just some slides from a training that we did in Tirana, Albania, last November, in which we brought all of the people who serve as field leaders for the different places where we have work going on, and we just train them in all sorts of just what they need to know in order to lead their teams well. Next.
Yeah, we were at lunch yesterday with Bob. I was saying that in our first couple decades overseas, we realized that if workers are supported and encouraged and taken care of, they really do thrive, and they can stay for a long time doing what God has asked them to do. So member care is a big thing what we do, ministering to families, and couples and families and children, helping them when difficult things come up for them. And also, we have the privilege of saying to folks, you are really burned out, and you're going to take a couple months, and you're going to go get a debrief, and you're going to... And sometimes they just, you can just see the relief. And that's a really practical way to care for our people. So we take this very seriously. And this is an example. So we had evacuated 6 families out of Ukraine in January of 2022. And we did a debrief with them at that time, but this past December, we realized that these guys need more debrief because the war is still going on. The wounds are still open. The pain is still fresh. So we met in Colorado and had 3 days of debrief with them, and it was wonderful. And that's just a way in which we need to see the needs and meet those to care for our people.
Next.
Crisis response is often part of, evacuations, medical emergencies, natural disasters, and we've had a couple wars in our region, which we never thought would happen when we stepped into this role, war in Europe. That doesn't happen, but it has. And so this is something that, sometimes we can work night and day for a while on these things, but we've actually had several earthquakes, too, in our region. And so this actually has been a big part of our responsibilities in the last years.
Then the next one is being a liaison. Basically, when you can imagine that in any organization, there's lack of communication between different departments. Well, then imagine when you have people all over the world. And so one of our responsibilities is to act as interpreters, I guess, between the home office and then the people on the field, because the situations are so incredibly different. And so sometimes we will be bring in the news from HQ to, some of our families saying, you need to do this new policy. You've got to do this. Sometimes we'll be back at headquarters saying, you can't, this is a bad policy. We need to change this policy. It doesn't work on our fields and stuff. And so that's the joy that we have. It's not our favorite part of the job, but it's a really important part of the job. So, and then if you go to the next one, just some prayer requests. we want, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, just, yeah, we would ask you to pray for the end of the war in Ukraine. It's just ongoing and very difficult. And the few church plants that we have in our region, it's tough in Europe to plant new churches. But currently we have 5 going, and we're really excited about those. So pray for the strength, and we actually have one that's right about to launch. Well, they just already launched one, but they're raising up elders for the mother church so that the worker there can step out of that situation, so we're excited about that. And then our ongoing training, so as a follow-up for what we did in Albania, we're going to be doing pretty intensive training for our field leaders and team leaders, so we ask for wisdom for that time too. And then, yeah, we're going to hit, we leave Arizona and we have 3 days at home, and then we go overseas again. So if you could just pray for our stamina, honestly, that we wouldn't get sick, that we wouldn't get COVID along the way, because we really do want to be effective and we want to be sharp when we meet with our people. It's such a gift to be able to be in their homes and care for them and have meet their national partners, but we do need strength for that. So, and I also have a number of prayer cards, so if you would like one, you can ask me for one up here later. Thanks. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Pastor Matt, for allowing me to preach today. It's a privilege, really is. So thank you again, and just thank you for being a partner with us. We do not take that lightly or for granted. You know, a number of years ago, probably a decade or two ago, I read an essay, and the essay was called Escaping Through Windows. And I was fascinated by that. I thought it was great, because what the author was doing was he was trying to make connections between the three stories that we have in the Bible of when people had to escape through a window to get away. And to be honest with you, I don't remember what he said, okay? So I'm not going to be stealing his material, just his title, okay? But that's what we're going to talk about today. And hopefully, each of you right now are thinking to yourselves, what were those three stories? Escaping through windows. Really? Three times people had to escape through a window? Probably the first one you probably have. That's probably the easiest one. Chronologically, the first one was in Jericho. The spies in Jericho, exactly. When they went, they were spying out Jericho. Joshua had sent them, and Rahab helped them escape through a place in the wall, a window, and they got away. The third one, chronologically, you might also have. That's probably the next easiest. That was when Paul escaped. You remember that? When Paul, he was going to Damascus, he had his encounter with the Lord, and then he was led into Damascus, and he became a believer. And then he started to preach, and he preached for a long time in that area, in Damascus, and then in other areas around there. But people started to get angry, and he basically had to flee for his life. And he was let down the wall through a window, and he escaped. How about the third one? Does anybody have the third one? David. You remember? You remember David? David, before he was king, Saul was every once in a while, a spirit would afflict him, and he would try to kill David. And so David, by this time, had married Michal, Saul's daughter. And so they were in their room, and Saul sent soldiers to watch the house that night. And then in the morning, they were going to go in and get David and kill him. And so Michal helped David escape through a window, and he got away, okay? So I think that's fascinating. I love stories like that. I love the fact that Paul in the New Testament had an experience that resembled these two stories that we see in the Old Testament. If you look at it, if you think about it, they really have some things in common, don't they, these stories? First of all, in each case, the person was escaping for their life. Their life was at risk. It wasn't just some kid who thinks he's pretty cool because he figured out how to get out the window, and then he goes around and rings the front door, and his parents say, what'd you get? No, they were running for their lives. The second thing that they have in common is that in each case, they needed help. The person escaping needed help, and it was the help came from a pretty unusual source. You think about the spies, they were helped by a citizen of the city that they were mapping out, that they were later going to attack. In the case of David, he was helped by the daughter of the man who was trying to kill him. And then in the case of Paul, he was helped by the disciples that he had actually originally come to Damascus in order to arrest. So you really see how God was working in that situation to protect these people. And you see, the third thing that they all have in common is that in each case, they escaped with their lives just barely, but they escaped to fight another day. Because in the case of the spies, well, they go back to Joshua, and then Joshua then attacks, and they're victorious. In the case of David, he escapes with his life, he gets away. It's Saul then who dies soon after that, and David becomes king. And then, of course, with Paul, he escaped that situation, but he lived to become the greatest missionary that we've ever seen. You know, God gave him victory, even though in that moment he had to escape. But, you know, we're not going to be talking about all three of those stories today. We're really going to be focusing on Paul today. Because it's interesting that not only do we read about this event in Paul's life in the book of Acts, Acts chapter 9 is where Luke mentions it. We not only see it there, but we actually see it in 2 Corinthians 11 as well, because Paul himself mentions the story. So I don't know. I don't know what Paul actually thought about Luke mentioning that story. I mean, it's not a very attractive story. I mean, he's led out through a window in the wall in a basket at night. It doesn't really portray him in a great light. And yet, I don't think Paul was mad at Luke, you know, for sharing that embarrassing story, because Paul mentions it again. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to see this. You can show that. We're going to see this passage, and we're going to see why Paul used this particular story. What was the context? So that's what we're going to look at. So let's read it. If I must boast, this is where he mentions it. If I must boast, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. The God and Father of the Lord Jesus, who is to be praised forever, knows that I am not lying. In Damascus, the governor under King Aretas had the city of the Damascenes guarded in order to arrest me. But I was lowered in a basket from a window in the wall and slipped through his hands. I don't know. It doesn't seem to me to be a real heroic story. Maybe it is. But I think that for Paul, he looked at it as sort of an embarrassing story. You see, in the context, not just the immediate context of this verse, but also in the broader context of 1 and 2 Corinthians, Paul had talked a lot about humility. He had planted the church in Corinth, and so these were his spiritual children, and it was difficult. It was a difficult situation, because they were really blessed spiritually. They had a lot of spiritual gifts that they were very proud of. And so Paul, in his letters to them, is constantly telling them, you know, it's not about you. It's not about how impressive you are. It's how impressive Christ is who works through you. How impressive the Spirit is who you know, manifests these gifts in you. That's what's impressive. And so he's constantly saying things throughout the two letters about the fact that they really need to show humility. And he, for instance, in the first chapter of 1 Corinthians, he talks about how God uses the foolish things of the world and the weak things of the world. And he's talking about them. He's talking about the Christians. Yeah, foolish and weak things of the world to shame the strong and the wise. And he goes on and he forms this. And he talks about how we boast not in how great we are, but in what Christ does is in us, in our weakness. Also in 1 Corinthians, we have the famous jars of clay metaphor, because Paul is talking about this incredible power and this incredible message that has been entrusted to him and to the other apostles. And you know, God put that into jars of clay, weak vessels. And then in 2 Corinthians, he gets to chapter 11. Let's go to the next slide. And he has a problem. And the problem are these, what he sarcastically calls, the super apostles. And so what happens now in this part, it's the last part of 2 Corinthians now, he's got a problem. And the problem is that these super apostles are coming in and they're preaching a different gospel. Look at this. I do not think I am in the least inferior to those super apostles. I may indeed be untrained as a speaker, but I do have knowledge. He talks about being untrained as a speaker because, well, today, when people are really good at giving speeches, they're very, very articulate. We're impressed by that. But in the Greco-Roman world, it was even more formalized. in that great orators studied rhetoric, and they studied, they could speak in such a way that people would recognize, whoa, they've been trained as orators. And it seems that some of these super apostles had not, had been trained that way, but Paul had not. And so this is it's not the first time where he mentions the fact that, yeah, he's not great at speaking, but he does have knowledge. And he says, this is the serious problem. This isn't just, oh, my feelings are hurt because I think that you Corinthians like these other people more than me. No, this is a serious problem. Look at what he says. For such people are false apostles, deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. It is not surprising then if his servants also masquerade as servants of righteousness. Their end will be what their actions deserve. This is a major problem. Let's go to the next slide. Because what Paul is dealing with here is how can he defend himself and his gospel against these, on the one hand, and then model. Model is such an important word, I wrote it twice. Okay, godly, humble behavior on the other. How is it that he's going to say, you know what, these people aren't that impressive. I'm much more impressive. Let me tell you about all the great things I've done. See, he'd be contradicting this message that he has so consistently been giving in 1 and 2 Corinthians to this church. So how does he do this? He loves them too much to just let them be deceived and to follow these false apostles. And so that's what chapter 11 and chapter 12 is all about, is how Paul can find the balance here between defending himself and his gospel, and on the other hand, remaining humble. And so that's what he's going to do. Let's go to the next slide. So he says, I hope you will put up with me in a little foolishness. Okay? Because he is going to be foolish now. He's going to act in just a ridiculous manner. You know what he's going to do? He's going to boast. He says he's going to do what other people do. You know, the idea is sort of like, you Corinthians seem to be so enamored by this boasting that they do. So, okay, if that's what you like, let me do it too. But it's ridiculous. It's foolish. You gladly put up with fools since you are so wise. It's kind of like the idea is, so put up with me. I'm going to be a fool now. I'm going to act like a fool. I'm going to boast. But, you know, you're used to it. You put up with fools all the time. In fact, you even put up with anyone who enslaves you or exploits you or takes advantage of you or puts on airs or slaps you in the face. To my shame, I admit that we were too weak for that. He's being sarcastic. Whatever anyone else dares to boast about, I'm speaking as a fool. I also dare to boast about. So now I'm just going to read here what he goes on to say, okay? He's going to start boasting. Are they Hebrews? So am I. I'm in chapter 11, verse 22. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they Abraham's descendants? So am I. Are they servants of Christ? I am out of my mind to talk like this. I am more a servant of Christ than they are. So isn't this funny how he says, I'm out of my mind to talk like this? Later on, he's going to say, I'm out of my mind, but you drove me to it. You drove me to it. So he goes and he says, are they servants of Christ? I am out of my mind to talk like this. I am more. I have worked much harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged more severely, and been exposed to death again and again. 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and day in the open sea. I have been constantly on the move. I have been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my own countrymen, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger at sea, and in danger from false brothers. I have labored and toiled and have often gone without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst and have often gone without food. I have been cold and naked. Okay, do you see what he's doing here, though? I mean, he says that he's going to start boasting. He's going to start boasting about how great he is because it's like, hey, that's what I need to do with you people to show you that I'm not inferior to these others. But when he actually starts to boast, I would expect, and if I were helping him write his resume, I would say, no, Paul, you need to boast about your miracles. Tell him all the miracles you've done. Tell him about all the churches you've planted. Tell him about all the people you've led to Christ. That's going to impress him. That's not what he does, is it? He talks about all these things that have caused him to be weak. I've been hungry. I've been thirsty. I've almost died countless times. I've been in danger. I've been cold. I've been naked. Is he really trying to boast here? He's really being subtle, isn't he? Because he's not boasting about himself. This is not attractive. This is not attractive, you know? I've been naked. I've been cold and hungry. And so that's the context then in which he tells this story that we started this with. Because he says then, besides everything else, I face daily the pressure of my concern for all the churches. Who is weak and I do not feel weak? Who is led into sin and I do not inwardly burn? And then, let's go to the next slide. Then he goes to this passage again. If I must boast, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. In Damascus, the governor under King Aretas had the city of the Damascenes guarded in order to arrest me, but I was lowered in a basket from a window in the wall and slipped through his hands. Now, there was a tradition in Rome in that Roman armies would give a crown to the first soldier that would be able to get up the wall, the city that they were attacking, and plant the flag in on that wall. It was called the mural crown, okay? And it doesn't seem like they gave it out very often because, quite frankly, they didn't have to, because the person who gets up on the wall first, who climbs up the wall, plants the flag there, is exposed to all the arrows and the weapons. But the Romans were trying to motivate their soldiers to be brave and to attack. And we really don't know for sure, but a lot of scholars think that Paul had this in mind, this tradition in mind, and that his readers also would have had this tradition in mind. So kind of think about it. It's like, yeah, they give a crown out to the first one up the wall. Well, gosh darn it, I was the first one down. I was the first one down that wall. I was getting away as fast as I could. So I don't know if for sure if he was thinking about that, but very possibly. And it would fit really well with the whole tone of this passage. Yeah, it was not a pretty sight, okay? It was dark. I had to get out through a window. They lowered me down in a basket. And I got away. But you see, he's boasting about his weakness, not about his strength. And so then he goes on. Let's go to the next slide. He goes on then to chapter 12, and that's the famous passage that talks about Paul's thorn in the flesh. But it's a continuation of this. I must go on boasting, although there is nothing to be gained. So again, he's saying, don't try this at home, okay? I'm boasting, but don't try this at home. Although there's nothing to be gained, I will go into visions and revelations from the Lord. I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to the third heaven. Now, I'm convinced that he's talking about himself, but he's trying to distance himself. He's trying to, again, say, it's not about me. It's about Christ and what Christ has done. I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to the third heaven. Whether it was in the body or out of the body, I do not know. God knows. And I know that this man, whether in the body or apart from the body, I do not know, but God knows, was caught up to paradise and heard inexpressible things, things that no one is permitted to tell. I love reading this because it gives me insight into the knowledge that Paul had. You know, how is it that we trust Paul to present to us the gospel, to tell us what the gospel is? Well, he had his encounters with Christ on the road to Damascus and then in this situation too. Let's go to the next slide. So he says, therefore, in order to keep me from becoming conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me, but he said, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. That's beautiful and horrible at the same time, because a lot of us understand we have things in our life that weaken us physically or maybe emotionally or whatever. And yet, in Christ is saying, my mercy, my compassion, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. So it's wonderful, but it's painful when we're living through that, isn't it? Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses. Once again, I don't know how many times in 1 and 2 Corinthians he talks about boasting in weakness, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. You see, Paul was willing to suffer. We don't know what this thorn in the flesh was. We don't know what it was, but it was uncomfortable. It was enough. It was distracting or painful or whatever, enough to Paul that he said three times, I prayed for Christ to eliminate that. And then Christ said, no, it's important because you have received a gift. This vision that you have received is so immense that I need to do something so you will not become conceited and you will not glory in yourself and what you've received. And you know, Paul accepted that. He said, okay, because see, Paul was more concerned about the gospel. He was more concerned about what his message, what his ministry to others was going to be than he was about his own physical comfort or his own emotional comfort or whatever it was. He was more concerned about how God was going to use him. So if God needed to do that through his weakness, okay. Because you see, when we are weak and we accomplish great things for the Lord, people can see, oh, it really wasn't you, was it? Yeah, I've seen you. You're not that impressive. Yeah, but this is awesome. Christ is working in you. See, and that's the idea here. And that's why Paul is willing to repeat a story that's kind of embarrassing about having to escape down a wall, you know? So how do we apply this? Well, let me just give you a few examples. I'll give you some examples from my world, living overseas. Let's go to the next slide. First application, we need to be willing to laugh at ourselves because, you know, most people don't look good escaping through windows. They don't, okay? They just don't. And so, example, okay? People go overseas in order to share the gospel. What's the first thing they have to do? Go through customs. But okay, first thing you have to do, learn the language usually, right? Oftentimes, learn the culture. Learn a new culture. Figure out how to pay for your electric bill in a system that you're not used to. You know, you don't look good doing those things. You just don't. It's embarrassing, you know? And so we talk to our people when they are learning a language that we were taught before we ever went to Spain. We were taught, you need to make a million mistakes before you can learn a language well. Okay? A million mistakes. It's not scientific, but hey, it gets the point across. You know what? You have to make so many mistakes in order to learn a language, so you might as well get started. And that's the idea. Get out there and throw yourself into it. But you know, you don't look good. You don't look good learning a language. You don't look good learning a new culture. And yet, you need to be willing to be embarrassed. In a lot of times like this, when we've been at churches here in the States, one of the questions that they'll sometimes ask is, tell us your most embarrassing language learning story. I think that's a great question because, you know, we need to have learned by this time, you know, that it's okay to be embarrassed. It's okay to laugh at yourself. We're good at it. We get, you know, and just think about the spiritual discipline that the Lord has given to me, because I teach a lot in Spanish. I can speak Spanish. I've learned Spanish. You know, I can speak it well, but I will never get rid of my accent, and I will never get rid of these stupid little grammar errors that just make me sound like, you're not from here, are you? You know, it's good for me. It's spiritually good for me. But you know what? We need to be willing to laugh ourselves. And whenever you approach someone maybe that's different than you, and you approach them with the love of Christ, and maybe you don't really know their culture, maybe it is like a new culture from a different country, or maybe it's just this person is different from me, but you approach them in love, you know, it might be embarrassing because you might not say all the right things. You might not know exactly what to do, but you know, you do it because we're willing to go through windows, aren't we? We're willing to do that. We're willing to be embarrassed and to laugh at ourselves. Let's go to the next one. Also, I'd say an application is we're willing to do what we aren't that good at. Because most people, they're not that good at going through windows. They're not very comfortable doing it. Okay? And so here we have a balance. Because we often talk about the importance of knowing what your spiritual gifts are and going with your spiritual gifts. And I completely agree with that. I teach that. We need to know where our spiritual gifts are. We need to spend most of our time in our area of giftedness. But you know, you can't always do that, can you? Sometimes you just have to do what needs to be done. You know, not a lot of people have the spiritual gift of cleaning bathrooms or whatever else, you know, picking up dirt off the floor. But sometimes that's what needs to be done. And we often tell people who come overseas, say, you know, you've got to be flexible. You've got to be flexible. We knew a couple, wonderful couple. And they came over to one of our countries, and the wife especially, she had this vision. She knew, she could visualize what she was going to be doing because they had visited that field before. And so she had seen. And what she was going to do, and this is what she told all of her friends in the States, she was going to go over. There was this community center that ministered to people from other parts of the world. And she was going to sit at the front desk, and she was going to welcome them as they came in the door, and she was going to orient them. And you know what? She would have done a great job of that. The problem was, by the time she got there, the situation, the ministry, had changed. There was no front desk. There was no need for anybody to be there to be greeting. What she had imagined, what she had visualized, didn't materialize. And so she needed to adjust. She needed to adapt to what needed to be done. And it was very difficult. It was very difficult for her to do that. She kind of was hanging on to that vision of her dream of what she was going to do. And you know what? We've got to be willing to do what we don't really want to do. We have to be willing to do what we're maybe not good at. We've got to be willing to go through the windows, you know, if that's what it takes. Well, a couple that are colleagues of ours, they were in a country that is very difficult to stay in the country, difficult, it's dangerous to be there, and they had been there 14 months. In that time, they were working hard on adapting to learning the language. It's a difficult language to learn, and they had their first child there. I mean, a real full 14 months. So all this time, they're imagining, it's like what life is going to be like for the next couple decades. But 2 weeks ago, they went to the interview for the renewal of their visa, and they were denied. And they were given 10 days to leave the country. So not only did they need to leave the country that quickly to pack up things, but they also had to start adjusting to, so where are we going to go? Because it doesn't look like we're ever going to be able to serve here in this country, because it's just that country. That's the way it works. If you're denied, it's pretty much it. And so, you know what? They climbed through the window. They really did. And they did not want to do that. That's not what they were looking to do, but they did what they had to do. And we're really proud of them. And that's now shows my job is to work with them to see what's next. Where will they go next? So we need to be willing to do what we're not good at, what we don't want to do, because most people aren't comfortable going through windows. And so then the final metaphor, or the use of this metaphor, the final application, is the willing to be in danger. Because it's often because of danger that people have to climb through windows. So it's just, we have to find the balance here. Because quite frankly, if we're going to continue to reach people who have not heard the gospel, we've got to go to dangerous places. We just do. And yet we also should not be reckless. We should mitigate the threats that we can. But I'm just saying that we have to be willing to do that. And that's something that Cheryl and I, it's kind of uncomfortable to talk about because, like as she mentioned in our before, sometimes we have to make decisions about whether people should stay or should leave a country when things get dangerous. And, you know, if we let them stay in a dangerous situation, it's sort of uncomfortable even to mention it because what if 2 weeks from now something happens? The worst happens, well, not the worst, but if something tragic happens, then all sorts of people will be analyzing our decision-making and saying if we made the right decision or not the right decision. But, you know, we've got to be willing to make risks because the gospel is worth it. We've got to. And so, once again, we just see in Paul this amazing example and model of what we want to be like. We want to be willing to do what's necessary. And Paul, as you heard, as I was reading that list of things, he was in danger all the time, but he was worth it because the gospel is worth it, because the lives of other people are worth it, you know, to do that. And so I just appreciate Paul's example, and I want to continue to try as best we can to follow that. There is some friends of ours, they're colleagues, and they live in a very dangerous country, and it's a hard country to live in. And when we were there visiting them, and I saw a plaque on their wall, and it said, it was just a little plaque. I think they had done it themselves. It says, do hard things. Do hard things. I was just like, oh, that's interesting. And they told us. They said, yeah, that's sort of our motto. That's our motto for our family. We are a family that does hard things. So I don't know if you guys want to put this plaque up on your wall or not, but I'm thinking an idea would be to say, we do windows. Okay? You like that? You put that plaque on your wall, we do windows, and it reminds you. I know people who come in your house are going to think you wash windows, but that's not what I'm talking about. It means it's a reminder to you that we do windows. We're willing to be embarrassed if that's what it takes. We're willing to do something that's uncomfortable or something that we're not good at, and we're willing to even be in danger if the Lord is leading us into that. And so let's pray for each other that we would do windows and do them well.